Welcome to the Circle tonight. My name is John Magnus, and I'm a Lutheran campus pastor at the University of Washington in Seattle, and also co-chair of a group of ecumenical communities that work with the 26 federally recognized tribes here in the state of Washington. I'm still kind of in time warp. We landed today, and we'll be gone tomorrow. So it's a very brief and intentional time with you. Last night, Ron, who is to my far left, who is an ex-Peace Corps volunteer and a staff person with our ecumenical task force, we drove into Hazel and Oscar's home on the reservation a little before midnight last night, down in Yakima. So we spent some time talking and then started over here around 5:30 this morning. So it's been a long day. I'd just like to open our circle by introducing our guests very briefly. Hazel and Oscar Olney. They each have their own Indian names. Many of you perhaps know that among Native communities, it's not unusual for people to have more than one name. But I know them as Hazel and Oscar. I'll say just a brief word about each of them. Hazel. I met in 1987, and I'll close with my remarks this evening just to touch upon that very unusual meeting we had. But Hazel is a member of the Yakima tribe. For 7 years, she served as a tribal historian. For 5 years, she was and served on a tribal council. And for 5 years, she taught in the public schools Yakima, the language, her tribal language, is part of the educational system. Hazel is known not only for being a leader in her own tribe, but in the whole network of the tribes in the Northwest, she is held in very high respect. With her tonight is Oscar. They are newlyweds of just, I believe,
since
March 31st. And they were childhood, I learned this on the phone, they were childhood friends and pals. Their families would hunt and fish at some of the pick berries at some of the same sites. Oscar is a school teacher, middle school teacher. His brother, I found out, is superintendent for the tribe, and has been in the Air Force, spent time in Alaska, and is a sometime good golfer. But among other things, he plays the guitar, and Hazel told me, hey, why don't you bring a guitar in here? And I said, I'll get one. So we've got a guitar back here, and if you bug him a little bit, he'll probably share some things with you. Let me just close by saying that the reason for our arrival our acceptance of an invitation from Scott Hasserud, our director and the community, to come to Holden Village to bless a sacred site here and to help raise a teepee that will be used for prayer, sharing of dreams, a teaching circle. This afternoon, Hazel and Oscar and Scott selected the site that among two alternatives. And tomorrow, we will be recruiting in the morning or possibly even later tonight, a half dozen volunteers to help us raise the teepee tomorrow morning, and then it will be blessed before we depart. The thing that is significant about the presence of these two guests is that they represent the largest tribe in the state of Washington. And it is this ground that was originally included in the boundaries of the treaty that was put together in 1855. For the last 4 days, Oscar and Hazel have been spending most of that time at their Treaty Day celebration on the reservation, where Native people have come from all over the Northwest for dancing and celebration and for sharing food. And they just broke down their own teepees yesterday afternoon, and now have accepted our invitation to come and be with us. And so at this point, I just want to honor Hazel and Oscar and ask you to bless us with what you brought to share with us.
Before, I traveled to many parts of the U.S. on our tribal Indian problems. And as a rule, we always would say a prayer. So this evening, before I start, I would like to say a prayer in my native tongue. And that will just be a short one. And then we'll go on with the history about our Indian people, the Yakimas. So if everyone would rise. Chichna Nasht Deshkuba Boyaku Gu Kwatla Dashichichin Yunaviti Chambiao Ashknakwa Witkin Witchtawah Kamishkin Im Kaulak Ginam Ginam the Kunamapi Dam the Anamachichna Boa Nakni. Amen. I guess first of all, I'm going to go and talk about my people, the Yakimas. Like, we were in the dining hall and we met a young man from the East, and a lot of people don't realize what the Yakima means. It's an Indian name. Like, we told him that one bear is Yakka and many bears is Yakima. So he was really surprised that that is an Indian name. And many of the trails, especially in the Northwest, had been followed, where Indian people used to go back and forth and trade with the different tribes, like the coastal tribes and the different eastern tribes. But our reservation consists of 1.3 million acres, and we are 14 members of different tribes, and we're all rolled into one, and we're called Yakima Nation. And I'm very proud and happy to be a Yakima, and we have over 7,000 or 8,000 enrolled Yakimas now. And when I served on the tribal council, I was on the education board, and I was really pushing hard for our young people to not go into the high technical areas like the engineering and science and business and math and English. But since I've been out of office, since as of December 1st, I just hope the next person that took my place that is not goofing off, or I hope that they're continuing on with what I was doing, because that was my goal for our young Indian people. Because it seems as of today, I was going to go into prophecy. I never make out a speech. I never plan, what am I going to talk about? it just something that comes into my mind, and that's what I talk about. Today, with our young people, it seems that our young people are heavily into drugs and alcohol. And that's really sad. And the things that had been prophesied to our Indian people way back, and it had been handed down from generation to generation, and I had been the historian of my tribe, which my late husband had done. He was a historian, and when he passed away, well, then I was a historian for the museum, which is a cultural heritage center, which is close to Totnish there. But the things I guess I wanted to touch on was prophecy, how things had been prophesied way in advance. And as we were driving up here, John, they were driving ahead of us. And I told Oscar that, you know, it's really strange, but it just popped into my mind that our people, our ancestors were told, they said one day there will be people that will have white skin and they will have hair on their face, and our people could not envision, well, what do they mean, people with hair on their face, because our Indian people did not have beards or whatever. And then that's what came to me.
What was the rest of your
But I know our people, these are the things that were handed down. And I'm one of the lucky ones, because the language I'm speaking to you now is my foreign language. It was very hard for me to go to school and learn and grasp the English language. But I had been very lucky, because I felt that my elders were my greatest teachers. They taught me the oral history, something that has never been written down. But as time has come along, I would go and I would record our elders. And again, you just can't go up to them and say, I'm going to record you. You'd have to go and ask for permission, and you would have to talk to them in your native tongue and just sit with them. And then they'd finally say, well, now I'll let you come back maybe tomorrow or 2 days from now. Let me think about it, because our people did not want to be recorded. That was against their way of upbringing. They said, never leave your voice on anything or whatever. So that was one of their real strong teachings. But a lot of the elders did let me record them. And I really feel as of today that I really have the knowledge that had been passed down to my elders. And now I feel I possess all that knowledge that they have told me. And I have a lot of, I would translate the tapes into English. And to the families, now they can go to the museum and they can listen to their mother or grandmother or whatever. But it is hard to listen to a deceased person talking. But on this prophecy, when I talked about drug and alcohol, and my adopted parents from Warm Springs, Oregon, who came over for our Indian powwow in White Swan, they related history back, and it had to deal with violence, drug and alcohol, and they said that things were prophesied. They said things will come in this manner, in a square, but it's going to steal the mind of our children in the future. And sure enough, you see that as of today, even on the TV, all you see is violence. All you see on the movies is violence, and all you see even in the little innocent cartoons is violence. And the child is growing up with that mind. So I just thought I'd bring that out, because that really stuck in my mind after you two were driving ahead of us. So I thought, well, that would be my talk.
The spider webs. The spider webs.
Oh, yes, and then things were also prophesied about one day this land of ours will be like the land of spider webs. And our people thought, well, what do they mean, the land of spider webs? And they were prophesizing way in advance what was going to be taking place, and that was throughout the country you see the electricity, the telephone lines going through our whole country, the U.S. And they also prophesize that one day this pure water of ours will be very badly polluted. And there will be sickness that will be coming out of the water. And you see that as of today. You see all this toxic waste and whatever hazardous waste that's going into the water. And you see animals coming out deformed and whatever. And we wonder why people have a high rate of cancer and are different types of sickness, but these are the things that have been prophesied way in advance to us. And I'm seeing it during my time. But so that was just part of the things that I wanted to share with you. But our Yakima people, a lot of our people are being highly educated. They move off from the reservation to make a living somewhere else, because on a reservation it seems that the employment is not all that great. And it's really ironic where my people say, we are very poor. We don't have the things that we want, or we can't have the food that we want on our table. But yet, our people, our ancestors, survived on over 72 different types of native food that we got off from the land, off from the trees, off from the river, streams. And I have all those categorized. And these are the things that our people had survived on in the Northwest. We have the salad bowl, I call a salad bowl. We have the greens that we get certain time of the year, and also our roots that we get, and the berries and the nuts, and the black moss that we get off from the trees, and all our different species of salmon, which is not even safe to eat anymore, and the trout, and the birds, and the fowl. These are the things that our people have survived on. And when the beans, rice, corn, coffee was introduced, and my mother used to tell me that when the traders first brought this food, our people would get a stick and they would look at the coffee and they'd say, in Indian, they'd say, oh my goodness, you know, these are those little, what do they call those little bugs, sour flies or whatever? That's what they thought it was. And then when it came to beans, and they said it looked like ticks. And then the rice, it looked, resembled like the maggots to them. And so corn, we did not have corn in our area, but in other parts of the Indian country, they grew the corn. But our people were not accustomed to this, and they'd move the corn around and it think it was human teeth. So these are the things that my people had gone through, being introduced to different types of food. So I could just go on and touch on many different subjects, but when we talk about poor, when I was asked to go to the Mayan country in southern Mexico on March 1st, I said that if only my Yakimas could have seen the Mayan Indians in Mexico and the family that I had stayed with and the villages that I had seen, I said they would know what poor was, because our people at least have homes that they live in, and these people walk, but yet our people have transportation, and yet they say we're poor. Only thing that a person can say, we can all say we're very rich, because we're very thankful that we are here on this earth. Like I was telling John that I was born during my mother's change of life. And my father was 75. And I think I was telling you last night, wasn't it, or this morning, that I must have really been a handful to my mother, and my father has just seen a little child how active they are. And I could, it tires me out just to think about it. But I always tease my children. I have 4 daughters and 1 son. And I have 10 grandchildren. And I'm very thankful that I did come along during my mother's change of life. Because there were 10 of us, I guess, in the family. And out of 10, I'm the only one that's alive today. And it's really sad when you are all alone and you just have your children and your grandchildren. But I have known Oscar all my life. We were both raised on a reservation in the White Swan area. And he's a widower. And it seems that we had come back together again. And I don't know what else to talk about, but on our reservation, we have so many acres that is farmed and it's leased. Our people were farmers at one time. And like we're a lineal descent of the Cowlitz, that's in the Centralia area on the western side of Cascades. And at gunpoint, our people were forced to come over to the Yakima Reservation during the Allotment Act of 1887. And it's really sad that things had changed for our people, because our people and our religion, we believe in the mighty Creator. We always have, our ancestors always have. We are gifted with Indian prayer songs, and people still worship in the old Indian way with the 7 drums that they have, and we have our longhouses. And this is where you see the women dress in the wing dress. And this is what I wore when I was in South America, and not South America, Mexico. And at that time, I did not know that the Mayan men did not allow women to speak. And here I was a speaker. And I dressed in my the same wing dress. But I wore my sacred ceremonial hat. Only time that a person can wear this is if you have a permission from your elders to wear this. But today I did not wear it, because in Mexico, I had my hair is always cut short. My hair used to be really long. But when I lost my husband, I cut my hair really short. and now I can't seem to let it grow, and we have customs in that also. We have many different customs that is handed down from generation to generation, and we must follow what our elders tell us to do. Now I feel I'm an elder, and I talk to my children and the young people, and I tell them all the do's and don'ts. But like I was saying, when things are prophesied that it's going, this little square thing is going to take the mind of your child, and today it seems that our Indian lifestyle has changed drastically. Because when I was growing up, we were taught respect. Do not, only be seen but not heard. If we had people that came to visit, I could eat, but I had to go right on outside and play. And I could not run in and out, I could not be noisy, or I could not run up to my mother or my father and pester them, bother them. That was a no-no. And I was taught never to talk back. Always listen to your mother and your father or any elders, whatever they tell you, obey. And so this is the lifestyle that I grew up in. But now today, I'm talking about my people, how they don't have that respect anymore. And it really is sad. And I guess I'll close off right here, but later on if there's any questions or whatever you want to know. And I'm just a homemaker now, and it's good just to be home and not out there working. When I served on a tribal council, I was constantly getting called down. When you're in Indian politics, it's really hard. But yet I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed working with my people because I said that I was a servant of my people. I was not there for the power and glory. I went to different Indian meetings, which was very important, because we seem to be constantly fighting over our water rights or fishing issues and different things, that laws are constantly coming onto the Indian people, and it's really sad. And we have people in there now that don't seem to care. And this apology, this public declaration signed by the 9 bishops apologizing to the Indian people of their ancestors, what they had done to our people. Oh, and then another prophecy was that black robes one day would be coming. And again, our people did not know what do they mean, black robes. But they meant the Catholic and the Methodists that had first come into our country. And they baptized their Indians like mad. And our people did not know why are they putting water on us. But that was to have the fathers make a list of all the heathens and savages that they had baptized, and their records went back to Rome. And they actually killed our people along the Columbia River or different parts of the area. And I guess my great-grandmother, she was baptized, but she had a dream and a vision where she saw yellow water coming down from her, and she would work on Sundays, and so she didn't know why she was being baptized, so she turned back to the Indian religion, which is still believing in the mighty Creator. And how sacred the Mother Earth is to us, and how sacred so many things are to us. Like before we boarded the boat, Oscar was wondering what I was doing, but I saw medicine there, and I just broke a piece off when I was smelling it, and it's for acne. And so there were many different things that I had seen just as we were coming by the bus just to come here. And when you're so close to nature, too close to Mother Earth, you see many different things, and you recognize different things. I even have lists of all the herbs and medicine and what types of medicine to use for different ailments. And I almost died one year. I was skin and bones, and everybody thought I was going to die, but I guess I was too mean and ornery, but I pulled through. But it was all due to herbs that was given to me by a medicine man. And I pulled through, and I said, well, I don't care how fat I get. And he says, well, you're going to get well. So I'm very thankful today to be here with you and to share some of my thoughts with you of my people. So I guess I'll come to a close, and unless there's questions. And I kept telling Oscar that I'd like to have him, you know, sing on a guitar, because he's always playing the guitar at home. And I'll turn it over to him now, whatever, maybe he has something to say.
I studied counseling for a number of years. Eleven universities, nine colleges. I was a counselor for 11 years to the youth of America. And one day I was impressed by reading what a counselor had written. He went to a reservation to find out about the Indians. He asked in the village, where will I find the wisest man in your group? Naturally, the wisest man in the group was that old man that lives up there on the hillside. So he went up to talk to the old man that lived up on the hillside. He drove up and got out of his car. The old man was sitting on the porch. He walked up to the old man. The old man still sat on the porch. So the visitor rolled a cigarette, lit it up, handed it to the old man. The old man smoked the cigarette. So the visitor rolled himself a cigarette, smoked that. When he was finished, he looked up at the old man. The old man was still sitting there. So he rolled the old man another cigarette, lit it up. The old man smoked his cigarette. Finally, the old man said, this took about 30 minutes. The old man said, what did you want to know? And so the student said, I wanted to talk about the knowledge of your tribe. And I asked in the village who the wisest man was, and they told me I could talk to you. The old man looked at him. I'm old. What do you want to know? What is your knowledge? What can you tell me about your people? What can you tell me about our world? Tell me about your beliefs. The old man said, see that man on a tractor down across the road? The visitor looked way down the valley, and there was a farmer riding on a tractor, going along, working his field. Told the old man, I see the man on a tractor. You see that big rock on the hillside right there? The visitor looked over. Yeah, I see the rock on the hillside. See that pine tree on the hill over there across the valley? The visitor looked over and said, yes, I see that pine tree. See that cloud moving across the sky? Yes, I see the cloud. But what does this tell me about your beliefs? The old man said, they are the universe. Life is a circle. The sky is round, the earth is round, the sun is round, everything is round because life is a cycle. That man and tractor will disappear. The tractor will turn back to the earth. That stone on the mountain will disappear and turn into earth. The tree on the hillside will die and go back to the earth. The cloud in the sky will fall as rain, go back to the earth. Our world is run by a universal law. And as long as we follow the universal law that always remains constant, we will survive. But if we veer away from the laws of the universe, we will perish. Man does not make the law. Whenever man makes a law, it is no good. Only the Creator has the power to control the universe. Everything has its season. Everything must die. Everything must perish to sustain our earth. That's all the wisdom I can convey to you. And the student said, thank you. Rolled him another cigarette, gave the old man a cigarette. Old man sat back, looked across the valley, smoked his cigarette. the student sat there for another 30 minutes. No more was spoken, and the student left because he had been explained, had explained to him the beliefs of our people that everything is constant, everything is a circle of life. Everything comes in its season, and everything passes. With this in mind, I feel confident in my life. I feel comfortable. We have all this, but in 100 years, it may look like the tailings across the creek,
across the river.
I thank you.
Before we pass this guitar to Oscar to see if you share a tune with us, we'd like to invite the community to respond to Hazel, either with questions or comments or anything you'd like to. Well, yeah, please.
To her, what do you see the chances of the Native Americans in the future for survival as a nation?
Well, if we, the people of this land, if we are good caretakers of this motherland of ours, if we do not abuse it, if we are caretakers, and we must take good care of our Mother Earth, our motherland, so that she may provide all the necessary things, the food, the water, everything that we have on this land that we survive from. And if we are good caretakers, she will keep providing. Like we were talking earlier that there's a message by our Creator today. People say, I see on the TV, I see read in the newspaper that there's earthquake, there's hurricanes, there's floods, rain, tornadoes. Mount St. Helens erupting in 1981. And she blew back in 1831, and it was totally black for 2 days at that time. And it's a message by our Creator telling us that we must live our lives right, that we are doing something wrong. I think somewhere in the Bible, in the Old Testament, where I think it was Moses that went up to the mountain. He came back, his people were doing everything, and then that's what it reminds me of. I just think back, but the teaching is very strong that if this is a message, and I only wish people would open their eyes and really be great worshiper, be worshiping at all times. And I was very impressed earlier this evening where everyone met, and they were all singing in harmony, and the word of God, and just right down. And these things have to be taught. But we must be good caretakers of this land. It's up to us to be the caretaker, and then she will provide for us. That's just the Indian teaching that I'm sharing with you.
Righteousness. Have you noticed lately that at Christmas, in the programs at school, they no longer sing our religious Christmas songs? Because we have within our society groups of people that do not accept God, and feel that we are infringing upon their rights if we celebrate Christmas, which is the birth of Jesus Christ. If we celebrate that by singing religious songs, but they participate in Christmas, gift giving and all. Those are the inconsistencies of man-made laws. We cannot celebrate Christmas with the reason we celebrate Christmas in public schools today. Food for thought. It's sad, disheartening to sit in a public school and teach under the restrictions that we have and try to teach children righteousness. Do you remember when you were a child in school and you were all given rulers that had the golden rule written on them? Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Can you imagine what would happen if I gave my students rulers like that today? There'd be an uproar in the community. And our administrators would listen, and they would say, Mr. Olney, you cannot distribute rulers like that in school.
Yes, go ahead, Barbara.
I have a question. This is shifting gears a little bit. Could you tell us more about the history of this area, when it was ceded, and who was here, like in the Chelan area or Stehekin, and what your people's history was here?
Well, yes, that part I was forgetting. I'm just like the coyote, the trickster. I'm part from this area. My mother was from this area, and it's called Pshwanapam, the rock people. And it's the Stewart Mountain, they call, which is now Stewart Mountain. See, all the land areas have Indian names to them. And so I'm very proud that I'm part of this area. And so I have people, and I'm very proud that I felt like I was coming home. And we were talking about petroglyphs this morning, or last night. I forgot when, but the history that goes into the petroglyphs, and we were talking and saying that, I'll go back to the ceded area. At one time, this whole U.S. was all Indian country. Canada, Alaska, on down to Mexico, South America, clear on down. Our teaching is that we did not come through no Bering Straits, and this is what is in our Indian Museum in Toppenish, because I'm one of the designers of that museum. And talking to my elders, And so we are going against the history books where they say that we, the Indian people, native of this land, had come through the Bering Straits. That's not true. I'm going to have to go against the history in your history books. And what we were told, that each nationality throughout the world, by our Creator, all the different nationalities were placed in our rightful areas. So therefore we spoke all the different languages throughout the world. And so the Indian people were placed here in this area. So the many different tribes, we cannot speak the same Indian language. Like, I cannot understand the coastal people because their language is entirely different. But when Governor Stevens made the treaty with the people of the western area, and that was a really a sad situation, to where our people were herded into reservations, which I call today, I call it our concentration camp. That's the way I feel. I feel very strongly about that. And because we had to surrender our land, but yet this land was ours, our people, our Indian people's land. But because of the treaty made in June 9th, 1855 in Walla Walla, Fort Walla Walla, there's a big bank over where our treaty was made in Walla Walla. And to me, it's really sad as an Indian person of all the suffering that we had to go through. We had to surrender our land. We had to surrender where our ancestors had lived and hunted and fished and whatever. As we were coming through Wenatchee, I felt sad because our people, our leaders of the past, they were forced to sell their fishing site, which was from time immemorial where our people had fished, and they came there to fish. People lived there, and now the archaeologists are discovering all the ancient places. Like on our reservation, things are dating back 10, 11, 12,000 years, and then they wonder. And then I read in the paper, you know, what kind of people lived here. It was our people. And it makes me sick to hear the archaeologists say, well, we wonder what kind of people had lived here, but it was our ancestors. So this area, my mother was partly from in this area, but in our Indian language it's called Pshwanapam, and that's a rock people. And so I felt like that I was just coming home to see part of my mother's area. And I haven't been up this way for a long time, but this is the furthest I've ever come. I've just gone through Lake Chelan on up. But we are not able to hunt anymore or go gather our food where was our usual and accustomed places to go. We can't even go there because we're blocked by fences we cannot go through, and or our people get arrested or whatever for hunting. And it's really a sad situation. I wonder why were our Indian people placed on this earth made to suffer? Is there a reason that we are made to suffer? Yet we have neighbors, right? Join in our reservation, Yakima. They don't even know who we are. They don't even understand what we do on our reservation. Because we're stereotyped, because they think, well, just because they see a movie or TV or whatever, they think we're all drunkards, we're all, you know, we drink, we indulge in liquor. Like I talked to you earlier, that I was taught respect, I was brought up really strict, I couldn't even go to a school dance. And so up to today, I don't know what it's like to drink or smoke or whatever. I just never have done that in my life. So there are several of the Indian people that have never indulged in liquor or smoke or whatever, but yet we're all thrown into one pot. They say that we are all drunks and whatever. I said, there's a rotten apple in every bin. It is not only in the Indian people, it's in all nationalities. So that is my way of putting across my message. So I hope I answered your question.
Thank you.
Okay.
It's just a little bit before 9:30. I want to invite you to Hazel and Oscar will be with us until tomorrow noon, and I really want to invite you to approach them, and if you want to carry on a personal conversation at some point or pursue a question, I'd like to honor them both by mentioning how I first met Hazel. I said at the beginning I was going to mention that, but Hazel Oscar talked about the circle. Carl Jung talked about synchronicity, which means an intersection of time and space. The Greek word is the kairos, the moment. And in Native country, there's talk about mending the circle, mending the circle. To have Hazel up here, where she has never been, but her ancestors have lived, the stone people who have lived on Lake Chelan here. Tomorrow she will be blessing, along with Oscar, the teepee, which is also in a circle. And there's a circle that, there's a last circle, and I just want to acknowledge that tonight, with this document. In February 1987, a Lummi Indian who Hazel and Oscar know well, James Pringwolf James, sent a letter to the Church Council, Greater Seattle, saying that for the last 15 or 20 years, the churches had been involved in educational efforts and in advocacy efforts around treaty rights. But he said, there was one area that you have never spoken to, and it is a deep wound in our people. And he went on the letter to say it has to do with our traditional beliefs, which is really the soul of our people. Why have not the churches said anything about this? And yet they seem to be advocating for us in other areas. Out of that letter, a group of bishops, nine bishops representing nine different denominations, met, and with a small task force, which Ron is a staff member, met and helped them draft a document. That document was called the Bishop's Apology. And on November 22nd, every tribe in this state, was given a personal invitation to come to Seattle to receive a public declaration. And the site that was chosen was a burial site in downtown Seattle, first in Spring Street, right underneath the Forest Service's offices. In the midst of traffic, there were a group of 25 people that met there, about not eight or nine clergy and bishops, and about 20 Native people. Hazel Olney was one of those Native persons representing her council who drove over the mountains to be there. And in the rain is where we met. That night, this document was taken by hand into British Columbia and Northern Washington and read before 3,000 Indian people at a smokehouse. And 3 months later, it was sent to Holden Village and has hung on this wall for the last 2 years. It was a summer offering of Holden Village that allowed the task force to first employ Adams, Ron, who has been our worker. And so I guess I want to say that the apology has two parts to it. One is an acknowledgement of the complicity of the destruction of Native traditional religions. But also, it has three specific things that it pledges a commitment to. One is the protection of the practice of ceremonies among traditional people. Second is the protection of sacred objects. We're talking feathers, medicine bags, bones that are brought across the border and still used because of the church's presence now and defense in prisons for traditional Native practices. And lastly, for access to sacred sites. In February, Native people in Northwest Washington met on the San Juan Islands on a place called Madrona Point. And it was in celebration of the protection of a burial ground that both Native people and churches worked together in partnership to protect. In May's issue of Life magazine, there's a story about it. So the church's role with Indian people is a mixed one. It's the best and the worst. And those of us who are now part of the Christian community who have welcomed Hazel and Oscar here, the work remains unfinished. If any of you feel called or pulled in some way to move one step closer, you talk to this guy right here. And we will pledge to you that in some small way, you will have a part of this adventure that is going on, a kind of renewal that is happening within the churches alongside the struggle of Native people. So I'm going to close by just the last paragraph of this apology. The spiritual power of the land and the ancient wisdom of your indigenous religions can be, we believe, great gifts to the Christian churches. We offer our commitment to support you in the righting of previous wrongs, to protect your people's efforts to enhance Native spiritual teachings, to encourage the members of our church to stand in solidarity with you on important religious issues, to provide advocacy and mediation when appropriate, for ongoing negotiations with state agencies and federal officials. May the promises of this day go on public record with all the congregations of our communions and be communicated to the Native American peoples of the Pacific Northwest.